Thank you so much, Greg. I am so happy to meet our maestra, Emmanuel Haim. Emmanuel, thank you so much for a beautiful and joyous first half, and welcome to Philadelphia.
Hello, and I'm very happy to be here in Philadelphia.
You're celebrated for your Baroque interpretations. You have a renowned early music ensemble of your own, Le Concert d'Astrée, based in France. What is the challenge of imparting this early style to an orchestra such as the Philadelphia Orchestra or the Berlin Philharmonic, where the players are playing modern instruments?
I mean, the issues are of playing on either modern instrument or a historical instrument, of course, is quite important. But the thing that looks more important to me is the link that this very universal music has with any musician. And that's really my point. When you have such powerful music such as Handel, any player can immediately grab it and feel it. And that's different ways of looking at it from an instrumental point of view. But still, the music talks to you. And that's what I'm trying to do here with the players that are so incredible. I mean, in this piece that we're going to do now, the Delirio, you will see that it's so challenging for the players, but so well written as well. The oboe part of Il Delirio, very soloistic, is quite incredible. The violin solo is also amazing, and the solo cello. So the writing talks to any good musician, which we have here.
So it's a universal language, even though it comes from a much earlier time, such as the piece you opened with, Henry Purcell's Fairy Queen. It's hard to believe this score was just rediscovered in the 20th century.
I find the genius of Purcell so incredible in the details of the harmony, of the subtlety of the links between text and music in this Nîmes Flamand, for example, that we heard, the plaint, the powerfulness of the rhythms, the energy of the dancers, the roarness sometimes of some of the hornpipes that we played, and that again, that you can grab. So the distance of the time is not there. That's what took me to this music, really, is the fact that I don't think that this distance really exists. We can see it talks to us even in 2018.
You followed the Purcell with a very familiar work of Handel's, the music for the Royal Fireworks, which was commissioned by George II. What do you think it was about Handel's personality and his music that earned him royal favor?
Handel was somebody of a great appetite for life, and he could very well understand the reaction of an audience. So he was very much able to write with what he felt, but also for big events such as those Royal Fireworks to celebrate the peace treaty in 1749. And one can see immediately how he can paint the grandeur of the royalness, and that he could answer so incredibly well. The writing, again, for the brass is amazing. We play now a version for three horns, three trumpets, three oboes, and two bassoons, one contrabassoon, and the whole strings, timpanis, and drums. But when they played it outdoors, the request from the military people was to have as much grandeur as possible and to have the description is 24 oboes, 9 horns, 9 trumpets, 12 bassoons. I mean, like incredibly large number. And still, the sound that you can get from that, the writing for the instrument is absolutely brilliant.
We're going to hear a very early work of Handel right after intermission, which you mentioned, Il Delirio Amoroso. Do you hear the future Handel in this work?
What strikes me in all those early works is how he can immediately seize the genius of a nation such as Italy and take all the best of it in so quickly. The Italian styles, he can understand all of it. So the writing is very Italian, although there is a French piece in the middle of it. The entrée is written in the French style. In all these works of this period, he will have, it's like a laboratory of all the future operas. He writes so fast, so much music. I mean, we cannot count how much he wrote, and he will develop them a bit more because it was just played like once, twice, and then finished. So yes, we can see a lot of his future. Also, I guess that his knowledge of the singers starts there because he has an intimate relationship with a lot of great singers. And his genius was also to understand and bring them with him to Britain to make the success of his first operas. And he perfectly saw that he needed monsters such as Farinelli, Senesino, or all those incredible stage personalities as well as great singers.
It really inspired him, and what incredible music. I have a practical question to ask you, and for the audience who's listening who can't see you, there are two harpsichords on stage. You're leading from one beautiful instrument, and David Booth is playing from another. What is the reason for the two harpsichords?
We have a lot of records in the scores that there were two harpsichords playing. I mean, if you look also at the paintings or engravings, you see two, if not two, sometimes three, one at each end of the stage, one at the center. And we know that Handel was doing it from the keyboard. The role of the conductor was a bit different. I mean, it was somebody organizing, putting all things together, but that was a shared role between him, the composer, often at the keyboard, somebody at the leading violin. The continuo team was sometimes around the keyboard looking at the same score. So it was really a continuo team because you would play from the same score, and the role of the conductor was a bit different. So I think if he did that, that's the right way to do it, because if not, you change too much the music and the spirit of it. And also because it encourages all the players, including me, to be responsive to what's going on and be ready for the moment and responsive for the moment.
Speaking with you about this music, your passion is so clear for Baroque era music. Is there any Berlioz or Messiaen in your future?
No, I don't think so. I really stick to where my instrument belongs. So when it starts, I start. And the more I dig into early 17, the more, I mean, I see it's a universe in itself. And definitely I go, I mean, and in, you know, Mozart, still the harpsichord was there. But I'm already so busy with that, I don't think I will have enough time to go any further. I mean, although I just love Stravinsky, Ravel, or Dutilleux, or George Benjamin, I don't think my life will be long enough.
We never know. Thank you so much, Emmanuel Haim. It was a great pleasure speaking with you and hearing you.
Thank you.